from touching my napkin, which was between my thighs are burning.
Welcome to Analyst Talk with Jason Alder. It's like coffee with an analyst, but there's no actual coffee. Each episode, we interviewed an expert in the field of law enforcement analysis to share their career-defining stories and to get their insights on the world. Please join us on recognizing and learning from these brilliant minds as we define the law enforcement analysis profession one episode at a time.
Thank you for joining me. I hope many aspects of your life are progressing. My name is Jason Elder, and today our guest has 12 years of law enforcement analysis experience, working with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and is currently a crime and intelligence analyst with Maricopa County Attorney's Office in Arizona. She is an active member of both the IACA and the Arizona Crime Analyst Association. Please welcome Erin Wickersham. Erin, how are we doing?
Hi, Jason. I'm doing really well.
All right. This is a very special episode that we have. So we have decided to do a video because you and I are both fans of Hot Ones, which is the YouTube show that asks celebrities a bunch of questions while eating hot wings. So Sean Evans is a host. He does a great job. We are going to do our best to imitate Sean. So how do you do with spicy food?
I'm pretty good with spicy foods. I always have like a hot sauce selection around. In my personal hot sauce collection, I've got some pretty spicy ones, but this is going to be a test.
Yes. All right. So we got 11 sauces and 11 questions. Let's get her done.
Okay. Let's go.
All right. The first one is the classic.
Okay.
Not bad. About 1,800 Scoville. So we're going up to 2 million.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you discover the law enforcement analysis profession?
Sure. So when I was little, back in the late 80s, early 90s, there was a TV show called Rescue 911. And William Shatner was the host. And I would watch it. And, you know, little kids want to be like doctors or ballerinas. I wanted to be a 911 operator. I thought that was going to be really cool. And my parents knew me pretty well. And they were like, you probably shouldn't do that. I don't react well to like other people's pain. Like I don't like fail videos, that type of stuff. And they're like, that's like all you're going to be doing is listening to like people in crisis. So maybe like explore some other paths. So as I got towards high school, I had heard about like FBI profilers and being in the FBI. And I thought like, that has to be the coolest job. I want to be that. So I sort of like kind of went towards that angle. I went to Arizona State for my undergrad. I studied psychology and French. And I knew like, I'm not gonna get anywhere with either of those in Arizona. So I tacked Russian on there, took 3 years of Russian to try to maybe go like a CIA angle or language skills, right? And as I was working with a researcher, she started the psychology and law program at Arizona State. And it was a PhD JD. And I was like, no, that's just way too intense right now. And she thought, have you ever thought about a master's? There's some forensic psychology programs out there. And I was like, oh, that sounds great. So at that time, there were two major programs, John Jay in New York, and then Marymount University in Arlington, Virginia. And Marymount had a requirement to do an internship. And I was like, internship in DC, FBI profiler, like in the bag.
Yeah.
So I applied, got in, and during grad school, I got a job as an admin assistant at the US Department of Justice in the criminal division. So that really kind of got me into the world. I interned with the DC Police Cold Case Unit and with the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, NCIS, like reading all of their sex assaults. But really the key thing was a class called Forensic Psychology 101 that we had our first semester. And in that, we had people from the field come and talk to us. So we had an FBI profiler come and talk to us. And we had like a jury consultant come and speak with us. And there was someone there who came, her name's Christina Fernandez. She was from NCMEC, and she, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And she came and she talked about what NCMEC did. And when I saw that, I was like, that's what I have to do. And so that is really, from then on, that I was working towards that position at NCMEC.
All right, good. Next sauce is the Red Verde hot sauce. This is from Red Clay.
I'm already sniffing. This isn't good.
I know. It's going to get
worse. Not a good sign.
It's going to get worse.
That doesn't seem spicy.
Yeah, it's definitely got some interesting flavors to it, but it's not as spicy as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, it's nice.
So working for the National Center of Missing and Exploited Children, what were some of the tasks that you were doing as an analyst, and what was the most difficult part of the job?
So I was, when people hear NCMEC, they normally think of the missing children's side of things, right? John Walsh started it in the 80s after the disappearance and murder of his son. And so this organization, they're a nonprofit, and they're congressionally mandated to do several functions. And it's primarily to serve as a clearinghouse of information on missing and exploited children. And Christina had worked in the exploited children's division. So that's what her focus of the presentation was on. And so I was like, I want to do that. It's really, really difficult and challenging, but that's where I want to be. And I interned in the missing children's division, so I got to see that side of the operations. But ultimately, I went into a program called CVIP, the Child Victim Identification Program. And there's two components to the exploited children's division. There's a cyber tip line and then CVIP. And both of them provide training and assistance to law enforcement in child sexual exploitation investigations. And so in CVIP specifically, what they do is review images of child sexual exploitation material. Under legal terms, that would be called child pornography. So CSAM, they review CSAM that has been taken off of someone's computer, usually a guy's computer. They review those images and videos to determine, are any of these children already identified from previous investigations? And then if not, can we use clues that are within these files, whether that's in the images, in the audio, in the EXIF, in the filing, to figure out where these children are and send it to law enforcement in that jurisdiction. And so CVIP cranks through tons of files. At that point in time, shortly before I left, it had been in inception since 2002. Around September 2014, they'd already processed 121 million files. In that number of years, right? Mm-hmm. And then in 2018, they hit 250 million. And then I just checked and they're already at 322 million files that they've processed looking for victims and working with law enforcement on those. So in terms of challenges, obviously the content, and this is really difficult stuff. I mean, you're looking at pictures and videos of generally prepubescent children being sexually abused, and then that's being disseminated. And so we are just, NCMEC is really trying to do that work to get them identified and get them out of that situation and then somewhere safe.
Wow. I remember the show To Catch a Predator.
Yes.
And it was by Dateline on NBC. Mm-hmm. And I remember they were catching so many so quickly that they had to shut down the operation because they just would talk to these guys online and get them to come to a location. And then of course the guy descends and say, hey, let's have a talk. And it always made me shocked how prevalent it was. And it's not even one of those things where you're talking about an 18-year-old who's technically an adult that might have a girlfriend that's 16 years old and dealing with that kind of technical child pornography. I mean, this is stuff where it's 10 years old, 40 plus, the predator is 40 plus years old. I mean, how would you explain how prevalent child pornography is to somebody?
It is, it's like shooting fish in a barrel. There was a news article that we'd had on the wall at NCNIC, and it said, this is like shooting fish in a barrel. And it really is. Depending kind of on where the offenders are, they may be, the people who are trading especially, there's some people who are just on platforms that are, Google, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, it exists on all these platforms. Mm-hmm. Maybe someone more sophisticated will be going onto the dark web, but it's everywhere. And so I know that we're going like pretty dark pretty soon, but, there are a lot of positive things. I mean, it's an amazing team. So in terms of like the analytical side of things, great training. It's a great place to start your analytical career. There's formal training, there's on-the-job training. You are exposed to so many aspects of being a clearinghouse. There's someone there from every branch of law enforcement. There's a Marshals, FBI, HSI, Secret Service, USPIS as a liaison to the local agencies, military, at that time was an NCIS agent. So you really get to liaise with all of the Interpol, all of these law enforcement entities across the US and internationally. So, I mean, that's not an experience that most analysts get like right out the gate. So it's a really awesome place to start your career and to carry through.
So it's more than just viewing video and pictures.
Yes, yeah, there's a lot of problem solving. NCNIC gets a lot of resources, especially given their mission, right? They have a lot of private companies, big name companies that donate technology and resources to them. So there's a lot of fun, like tinkering around with things. Everything is built in house. So when it comes to like the RMS of NCNIC, that's built in house. And so if something happens, like you as the analyst, you're trying to figure out probably along with IT, like what happened, and you're giving them information, especially with the content that we dealt with, they can't see that stuff. So we are having to like put in like fake pictures of dogs so that we could like test things out, and like pictures of Oprah, just so that they could like see what we were trying to experience. So, there's a lot of dark humor there and gallows humor, right? And so you really rely on your colleagues and to get through the day. You got to laugh or you'll cry.
Okay. All right. Let's go on to the next sauce then.
All right.
So this is from Rising Smoke. It's called the It Hot Sauce.
Okay. Oh. And I would like to preface for the viewers at home, I normally eat like the entire hot wing. I'm one of those people that like sucks the bone dry. But in the interest of like trying to make it through, just kind of leaving it. We'll see how it goes.
Yeah, Sean says that viewers get mad at celebrities that just take a bite, that they don't eat the whole wing, and they leave.
Like, don't judge me. Don't
leave meat on the bone, right? So then, let's talk about your transition to the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. Why did you switch? Why did you move on to there?
So in 2014, my husband and I got married. I'm originally from Phoenix. He's from Virginia. And we were in the Arlington, D.C. area, and we did not want to be there long term. It was too cold for me. It's had enough snow, and my family's here. His family's in Southern Virginia, so we thought, well, let's go back to Arizona. And I saw, I'm looking for positions. I knew I had an end date, like our lease was up. So I saw this position for a crime statistical analyst in that Maricopa County Attorney's Office. And I had no idea what that meant, but I knew it said crime and it said analyst. And I'm an analyst and I have a niche market, right? I have all this CSAM knowledge, but like, I'm going to see, I know that I'm analytical, so I'm going to just go for it. So I cold applied. I didn't know anyone out here. And I think I was like on vacation seeing my husband. He was already living here with my parents, and went and interviewed, eventually moved out here. I was in the background process. And then finally in like October of 2015, they said, yeah, come aboard. So that's how I got to NCAO.
So, and then, and we've had Sean Ramoran on, who also has a similar position with that. So I guess when you're coming into this position, I guess, what was your expectations and maybe what surprised you?
So we were brought in, I started with two other individuals who were already with the county. They were also stats analysts. They were a little more strategic and administrative. And we've been brought in under that current, that county attorney at the time, Bill Montgomery. And he had a vision for the unit, very similar to what Sean shared, that the office would do an intelligence-driven prosecution strategy. So there's intelligence-driven policing. This is sort of taking it the next level, right? You have the police who are executing these strategies, which is all fine and well. You can arrest the person, but if nothing happens at the prosecution stage, then... You know, it's getting kicked back to the police. So really trying to emulate what they had done in the district attorney of New York's, Danny's office. So this was the first time our office had really had an analytical unit. They'd had researchers kind of throughout the periods, but never a group of analysts who were supposed to use prosecution data to identify crimes, patterns, trends, issues, and then relay that information, like feed it back to our prosecutors, give them actionable information. And that was really the first of its kind. So it was very like a startup mentality. I sort of attribute it to that.
Yeah. And I guess why... Just what were the main obstacles that you were working around when you first started?
There are very similar and familiar feeling obstacles to what I hear police analysts experience. Mm-hmm. So in the police world, you got the sworn versus the civilian. In the prosecution world, you have the JDs versus the non-JDs. Mm-hmm. So already I'm coming to the lawyer who says, well, I have a JD. I know they're all there is to know. And we have to, kind of speak their language and say, well, I'm also an expert in my own field and I've looked at this data. They don't necessarily speak numbers. You know, they might have to deal with, maybe they do fraud or financial cases, right? They prosecute those, but they're not as familiar with looking at their own data for that information. We were very lucky to have really eager IT people who were like, wow, no one has ever asked us for this information before. Like, and I had been fortunate enough to take the entire IACA series, training series, when I got here to Arizona. Scottsdale and Tempe both hosted it. So I took classes with Noah Fritz, Jim Mallard, Chris Bruce. I didn't know who these people were. To me, they were just like people, right? Yeah. Now I know they're like legends. And so they're telling us, hey, like, get with your IT people and tell them you need that, like, ODBC access. And I was like, okay. And I would go and our IT people were like, amazing, sure, like take it. So we were super blessed and we still have a really good relationship with IT and our like county GIS people. But I want, like, the prosecutors, you have to find that person who latches onto it, right? Just like you have to find the officer, the sergeant, who's like, the information you give me is awesome. That was one of the biggest challenges, and learning the prosecution process in general is just insane. It's like a choose your own adventure book. So that I still have no idea like half the time what is going on at a hearing. I don't know. I'm not a JD.
So you said it was a statistics position. So is it a lot of number crunching that you're doing?
So at that time we were all classified in this weird crime stats analyst. And I really think that though, like the position may have already existed. And so they just, you know, threw that in there. When I came, I said, okay, like I can deal with numbers, but I'm an Intel girl at heart, right? Like, and then as I learned more, because NCMEC, at least in CBIP, they do have a crime a case analysis division that does a little bit more of the traditional crime analysis stuff. In CVIP, we were all very Intel focused. And there was a component, right? This is intelligence-driven prosecution. There's an Intel component. Like, let me be that piece. The other analysts can handle the strategic and admin side. And so there came a point where we were needing to grow the team. We were getting a lot of requests for information from our prosecutors. And by we, it was a lot of tactical, like they were on call. They're at a scene of a homicide. Well, I was the only tactical Intel analyst there. And we had to start, you know, I'm tapping into my NCMEC background of like how to log cases, what resources we need, tracking workload. I'd been a supervisor at NCMEC. So I knew if I want to grow this team, like I got to track everything, right? You're like comp statting it, basically.
Yeah.
And so that was a really unique piece in that we got to grow that intel. And I said, we need to change the name of this because I am not a stats analyst. Like people are throwing numbers at me and I want to just like dig. So I got that changed.
Okay. All right. Interesting. All right. Let's go on to the next sauce.
Okay. Which
this is rising smoke. This is smoldering embers.
All right. I'm trying to channel Halle Berry's episode. She like doesn't take a sip.
Oh so, man.
I'm really like tapping into that.
Yeah, that was Stone Cold Steve Austin too. It didn't even look like he was eating anything hot. He was another one that I was really impressed with. All right. So it's story time. This next section is the analyst badge story. And so this is the career-defining case or project that an analyst works on. So what do you consider your analyst badge story?
So there's a case that I'm extremely proud of, and it unfortunately is an active case. So, and it's been active since 2017. It's very long term. And I was brought into it, and I really feel like it was sort of my reason for coming to MCAO from NCMEC. It has everything. I sound kind of like Stefan from SNL, but it really has everything. It has serial child sex assault, cold case, kidnappings, homicides, ending in homicides, serial burglary with elderly people, wealthy people, multi-jurisdictional. So in Arizona alone, we are working very closely with another jurisdiction. And then this defendant has traveled all over. And so we've done so much outreach to other jurisdictions to try to link cases up together. I've been fortunate enough to sort of live my dream and work with FBI's behavioral analysis unit on this case. And we're nice. and VICAP analysts and NCMEC analysts. I mean, every component we've pulled together. And when the BAU was telling you like, this guy is all over the place, you know, like when the doctor says, like, I've never seen this before. Like when the BACU says, I've never really seen this before. Like, you know, it's a good, like once in a lifetime type case. And so it pulled on everything I knew from NCMEC, everything I learned from the IACA courses, using contacts from IACA. Like you probably got an email from me that said, hi, I found your name in the directory of IACA. And I need your help looking up information in your RMS. So the collaboration that has taken place and what I'm really proud of is that like every specialty has used the tools that they have. So the investigators have, the interviewers, the analysts, right? Like we had a seat at that table. We've all used our expertise to make sure that a really scary and dangerous person stays behind bars.
That's interesting. And so what were some of the analytical techniques that you use?
So we've done a lot of like pulling in the information from, for example, his burglaries. and figuring out, okay, these are the areas of town where he is confirmed or believed to have been, which is generally based off of cell phone information, and mapping that information and then overlaying the missing missing children who are in those areas. We have intelligence that indicates that there are other victims out there, other homicide victims. So again, reaching out to those jurisdictions with the information that we have, and sometimes getting that information from them, searching these different databases, VICAP, NamUs, to see, okay, what missing and unidentifieds do they have there? How does that overlay with his known location? So pulling in NCIC offlines, all the data off of his digital devices, the computers and the phones, synthesizing all of that information together. I have a timeline that's like insanely massive, and I send it to everyone who is involved because I want them to know where he's been and what he's about. It's all over the place. And so, you know, really bringing in all of these disparate data sets to figure out where he's been and can we connect anything? And we feel that we have some connected, but we may never know.
Anyway, so that was my next question. Do you think you have identified all of the crimes of this guy?
Not by any means, we haven't. And I was hoping that there were elements within the prosecution process that would tempt him to divulge some of that information, but I'm not sure if that's going to happen. But we have, you know, we have stuff ready to go for when he's ready to talk and to say, are these crimes that we can attribute to you, and kind of see what he does with it. Hopefully, okay. It would be really amazing to have that closure.
Yeah. So is it just in the trial stage right now? Is that where the case is?
It is not even to trial. It is still in pretrial motions. He's very, he is really exercising his rights.
Oh, I see.
I see.
No, I think it's interesting. It's interesting when you get those really large cases, high profile cases, and it's all hands on deck, and you get to work with a variety of people, some doing exactly what you do, others doing something a little bit different. But I think, as you mentioned, you all had a seat at the table, you all had a piece of the pie that came together to nab this guy. So good work on that.
Yeah, it's a great team to be a part of.
All right, very good. All right, let's go on to the next sauce.
Okay.
So this is Bad to the Bones.
I'm still doing good.
Yeah, I don't know how they do this. I don't know if we're just talking too long, but my food's cold. I don't know if they somehow have a warming plate or something when they do this. But
I know, right? They have them on the little cutting board.
Yeah, I know. So it doesn't look like it's being heated, but mine are all cold. But that's okay.
Yeah.
All right. Next question. So you are the founder, or one of the a founder of the Prosecution Analyst Forum. What was the driving force around this, and exactly how many folks do you have involved in this forum?
So the Prosecution Analyst Listserv, PALS is what we like to abbreviate it to, started a few years ago, about 2018. And that came from conversations with Julie Wortel. So I got to meet her again, sort of like this epic person who I just randomly came across. Ended up hooking up with her, and she was like, yeah, you know, I'm at a prosecution's office. Oh, that's awesome. She's kind of the OG prosecution analyst. And, you know, as more of us started coming in, we learned there's Rafael Serrano. He's up at King County in Washington. Sean down in Tucson at Pinal. And then Danny, like, we knew, oh, there's this whole cluster at Danny. There's analysts in San Francisco. And so we started talking, like, it would be really nice to know, like, what they're doing. What RMS do you have? What data do you have access to? What are your attorneys like, right? Like, how do you overcome some of those humps and challenges? And it was really born out of, like, there's not a space for us to discuss this stuff. Not everyone is a member of IACA. that we come across in the prosecution analyst world. And not everyone necessarily needs to. I see a lot of value in it, but I'm also a part of ILEA, and they may be a part of ILEA and not IACA. So we didn't want to have to like funnel everyone to an organization. At the time, the president of AACA was at my office, and she was really supportive of putting up a listserv. AACA has a really robust listserv and an amazing webmaster, and she was able to get it so that we could have a separate listserv called PALS. And we got it started, I think, in like August 2018. And right out the gates, we had a lot of members. And I think I sent something out on like IACA, like, hey, we're starting this thing. If you want to be a part, like, let me know, send it to whoever, more the merrier. And now we've got 90 members. There's 71 of whom are from prosecution offices. Forgot to grab the number of prosecution offices, but I think it's probably about 25. And international also. So we've got members in Canada, Chile, and The Hague, all at prosecution. The non-prosecution members are law enforcement, policy advisors, researchers, other analysts who are just kind of interested and want to eavesdrop and see what the chatter is. And it's been a little quiet lately, but really it has been beneficial, especially when we're coming to some of these specific things like an RMS. I don't know what your PD one is, right? Intergraph. But I have PBK. I've got prosecutor by Carpell, and it's giving me problems, and I want to know who else has PBK, and so that we can, you know, bounce ideas like that.
Okay. All right. Good. And so let's go on to the next question. I mean, the next sauce then.
Okay.
You know, for those that are just listening, I will list all of the hot sauces, and some of them I don't know the Scoville of, but I'll try my best to at least give a range. So this is hemorrhoid helper. So we'll see how this goes.
Okay.
Yeah, that
I like put a decent amount on mine and rubbed it in. So
yeah. It's interesting. They do catch you like a minute into the thing, and they kind of like the slow burn. So
building.
So the forums is hosted by the Arizona Analyst Association.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so in 2018, you won Innovator of the Year award. And so what did you do to earn this award?
So that was a really gracious award that was written up by three of our coworkers. And it was myself and then my colleague, Elisa Ginter. And we were the two tactical intel analysts who really set the foundation for what the unit looks like today. Allie had been with the office for several years. She was helping in like background investigations and locates and serves. And when I got here, I was like, you know, I got to tap someone to help out. Like, our workload is growing. And she was super eager, wanted to get to an analyst level. So I tapped her and was like, hey girl, like, you're coming with me. I'm going to teach you everything I know, and you're going to help me like set this thing up. So in the span of 2 years, I mean, we ramped up operations. We had trackers, we were developing products, like we were really from nothing. I knew like, okay, this is what we had at NCMEC. So I gotta recreate that somehow with like MacGyver it together. And at the same time, we also need to like advertise our services and to get on the radar of the agencies in Maricopa County, because a key component was, Maricopa County is really, really large. It's larger than some states. And it, both population and land size. And there's about 20 unique law enforcement agencies within Maricopa County. We got Phoenix, everyone knows Scottsdale, you know, all their analysts have been on Tempe. So we needed to get FaceTime with each of these agencies. And so we went and I did like 70 presentations in 2 years to each of those groups to say like, hey, there's analysts at the prosecution office, and here's what we're doing to help our attorneys. Law enforcement analysts don't realize the data that prosecutors don't have, that they have, that is so valuable to their cases. So we were really working as that liaison role and trying to help share, like, we can better address crime the more information we get from you, and hopefully we're sharing information back to you also. So it was really, you know, our coworkers who we eventually hired, right? I was writing like justification memos of, if I get X number of requests in this number of months, if we extrapolate that out for the next, you know, year, we're going to get this number of requests. We need 4 more analysts. And we did. We were able to hire 4 more analysts in 2018, all of whom are still with us. So we've got a nice little team. We've got a supervisor. And it's it was for that that Allie and I got the award. It was really sweet.
Okay. All right. The next one. This is one of my favorites. It's Fire Fire. And that's okay. Directly from the show.
It's going to be hot. A lot thicker than the other ones. Was I was putting it on, I thought, this is like where it starts.
Yeah, I think so too. This is like the gauntlet now, because now we're getting into like the, you know, 200,000, 300,000 Scoville. So this is going to be good.
Yeah. Feel it on my lips. Okay. Yep.
All right. That's good. Mm-hmm. Now we're going to get into some advice. So one of the questions I like to ask is about return on investment. So what would you recommend an analyst study today that may be important 5 years from now?
So I thought of kind of two things. One's more maybe conceptual and one is a little more literal, practical. You can kind of dig your hands into it now. Conceptually, I think like social issues, right? We've got a lot of reform, calls for reform, and really just reimagining the entire criminal justice process. So there's a lot of focus on the police right now, but if you're in the prosecution spheres, there's a lot about progressive prosecutors and different jurisdictions who are bringing in DAs that are really reimagining what prosecution looks like, getting rid of cash bail, ending capital punishment, using data. There's a lot of prosecution offices that have data analysts and are putting up dashboards so that they can reimagine the process, but it's also based on the data that you're putting into it, right? And so I think imagining those roles, and then there's also the judiciary and the judges. The judges is where the buck stops. Like, we got the police, they send it to the prosecutor. Prosecutor can present it, whatever they want in front of a judge, but the judge can make a decision. And so I think it would be really exciting to see like judiciary analysts in the courts and at the judicial level who are crime analysts and who are analyzing that type of stuff. So that's sort of like at the social level, like staying attuned to what is changing and knowing that you as an analyst are part of that change. Sort of literally and a little more practical, I would think like crime in new spaces. And I think of this because my husband got an Oculus virtual reality headset. And my first question is like, what bad stuff is gonna happen there? Maybe it's a byproduct of me working at NCMEC for so long, but like what bad things are gonna happen there and how can we stop it? Or how do you report it? Like, how do you report something that happens in virtual reality? Yeah. And, the things, you know, you're not gonna have violent crime, but like threats, impersonation, fraud, right? People are gonna get scammed in this space. Intellectual property, maybe violations, like you built something and then someone like takes it over. I don't know. But I think that's a really cool area to maybe start looking into. NCMEC was a little ahead of like the sex trafficking stuff, which is huge now. Back in 2011, they started a sex trafficking team. Now it's all, you know, it's all the rage, sex trafficking, human trafficking. So maybe getting in on the front end of this sort of like virtual AI technology crime.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I thought it would already been here by now. It was probably about 10, more probably like 14 years ago. There was the online game Second Life that was very popular. Yes. And it got to the point where countries were recognizing Second Life as a sovereign state with its own rules and regulations and whatnot. And they people were going to the court and saying, hey, this guy stole my bed on the Second Life. And they had to deal with it then. And I really thought, just like you were thinking here, is like, how do you keep communication, all this other stuff, when just on this online world, if people wanted to meet up and do something horrible, how are we even going to detect it? How are we going to use this data? And as quickly as Second Life became mainstream, it went away. I don't even know if it's around anymore, but now I haven't heard about it in probably about 8 years.
They're probably all moving over to virtual reality.
Maybe it's
definitely like, is there going to be like a court and a police system within this like little world? Anything like anything on Black Mirror, when you watch, I can't watch it because I'm like, this is so twisted, but it's going to become reality.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, just watch Black Mirror, whatever that episode is about, go into that.
Very good. Very good. All right. Let's go into the next sauce then.
Okay.
And this is the Ghost Reaper. That one, that last one hit me pretty good. I don't know.
Yeah,
don't know if it's better you talking, like talking through it or not talking through it. Because I'm just sitting there like just a little bit getting heat without talking.
Yeah, I can feel it.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty impressed. My face isn't as red as I thought it would be, but I think it started out red, so I think I'm okay. All right, so let's get into some personal interests. As you mentioned, you spent some years in Arlington, Virginia, which is in Northern Virginia, right outside of D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, Whitlow's on Wilson, which was a bar, closed. And so what was your go-to item when you went to Whitlow's?
Do I remember what my go-to item was?
Or any kind of memory then of Whitlow's?
You know, at Whitlow's, I think of two drinks. One, Purple Haze. For some reason, that was like a thing that they had and everyone loved. It's not even from Virginia. It's from Louisiana, right? Yeah. I think. So Purple Haze beer. And then, what's the one that's in Pennsylvania that everyone drinks? Of course, I can't think of it.
Yingling?
Yingling. Yes, yeah. Yingling. So like being out west, we don't have Yingling. And that was like, oh my God, I thought it was delicious. Oh, this beer is so good. Now I'm just like, this is like crap beer. But probably going there and then like going in the like parrot room in the back where all the beach stuff was.
Nice. Yeah. I think everybody goes through like a certain beer phase. And I went through a Yingling phase and now I don't even find it appetizing. I just don't know if I drank too much in a lifetime and I'm like, I'm
done.
Very good. Yeah. All right. So, but it's sad that place shut down because I think it was 30 years
institution. Really,
right. So I did see where they're trying to just relocate.
It'll never be the same.
Yeah, that's true. It is location, right?
Yep. Yeah.
All right. Let's go to the next one. This is the Vicious Viper. And I tell
this
you
this one
what,
is also nice and thick.
This one, they're getting creative with the names.
Yeah.
So you've been pole dancing for exercise for about 6 years. And what is the most memorable reaction you received when you tell people that you pole dance?
I've been pulling longer than that longer than I've been an analyst.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I started pulling. And then when I got my job at NCMEC, I think they're like, what is this thing that you're doing? The most interesting reaction, I also used to teach, and I would teach parties, And women would say, like, oh, well, where do you dance? Like, oh, like I perform, you know, I'm part of a troupe and we perform, or, you know, I take ballet at Washington Ballet, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, where do you dance? I was like, oh, no, I'm not a stripper, but like, thank you for thinking that I move like one. So yeah, it was always fun to know sort of like what people's day jobs were, and to find out like you're working with, you know, you're dancing with doctors or just blue collar workers or strippers. Like it's really like Aerials is a very unique community.
All right. So what was the most difficult task that you were able to master that you were really excited? Like, yes, I got it.
Oh my God. So I'm not like a trickster, but there's something called a shoulder mount, which is really a basic trick, but for some reason for me, it was really challenging. And so I got that just before COVID shut everything down. Finally, it was like 8 years and I finally had my shoulder mount solid. And then my pull at home just doesn't do it for me. So I really haven't been drilling it like I should.
Oh man. All right. Very good. All right. I'm going to dip into the milk.
Oh, okay. I have mine untouched so far. I'm going for that Halle Berry.
Yeah, you're doing good. I'm looking at myself and I'm like, hey, you look like you're struggling.
And my lips are definitely burning, but like the inside of my mouth is good. So I'm okay.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's go to the next one. This is burn after, and I can't even read, burn after eating.
It's really lemony.
Yeah, that one's got an interesting flavor to it. So one of the segments from Hot Ones is Explain That Gram, where he shows celebrities an Instagram photo and gets more explanation from it. So I have sent you a picture that I found that you posted, and I was wondering to get more information on this particular photo.
Or do I need to show everyone at home, or are you going to?
I will post it on there.
So this was the death of my flip phone.
Okay.
Which I had flip, RIP flip, she had a name. She's a pink flip phone. Had her from December of 2009 to January of 2017. And the only reason we upgraded, okay, now that one's hitting me, is because my husband wanted a new phone. And I had a bunch of friends who were here for New Year's. They all pitched in $50 to say, Aaron, get rid of your flip phone. Like, we can't group text you. You're not on WhatsApp. Like, every group text was just like an individual text message. Any emoji was just that little box. It was T9. Like, I was just T9-ing. It was really great for the bus because I ride the public transportation to work. And, like, with my glasses on, and I'd whip out that flip phone. Like, I think people thought I was a drug dealer. And then they wouldn't mess with me. So I finally put her to rest. But I hung on to her. Still had it. And I just gave it to my grandmother. Because she needed a new phone. So now she has flip lives on.
Oh, man. So yes, that's a flip phone. And that's 2017. That is impressive to have a flip phone at that point in time. So,
But that was maybe in the last like 2 months, my mom was like, hey, your grandma needs a new phone. Do you still have that flip phone?
Mm-hmm. And it works?
And it works. Yeah, put in a new SIM card and charged it up. It has like... it lights up on the bottom or the top. And it's really sad. There's like no satisfaction when you hang up a phone anymore, like with a smartphone, right?
Yeah.
Like with a landline, you hang it up, and with a flip phone, you just slam that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, so there's no click. And they need to really do that. They need to create an app. When you hit the button, it gets a click on the other end. I'm really surprised no one's come up with that yet.
Yeah.
You're right. All right, let's do it. Last dab. Okay. This is
Two million. Are you gonna put the last dab on?
Yeah, this is the 2 million Scoville. So.
Okay. That might have been a lot. Oh my God. Okay.
See, I feel once you've done burn after eating, this one doesn't have as much bite. I think if you go from like fire to this, it's a huge jump. But once you've gotten down the Reaper and then burn after eating, this one isn't as big a jump as you expect it to be.
Maybe I've trained my taste buds so well.
Yeah, you are doing fantastic. All right, so... What is your favorite Russian word or phrase?
So Отлично is excellent, which is, you know, a nice word. It's really, I will think of like random words like Chasta often, like why do I remember this word? I like Отлично.
All right. Yeah. And that just reminds me, this is totally off topic. I just finished the Chernobyl series on HBO.
Oh, okay. Did you
see that?
No, we don't have HBO.
Oh, I highly recommend maybe you find it, or if they ever give it a free weekend for HBO, I highly recommend it. It is a fantastic story. I'm not sure how true it is, but it's, if any of it's even remotely true, it's a fantastic story.
Okay, yeah.
Of Chernobyl, so I highly recommend it. But all right. So we're to the last question. You've made it. Congratulations. This is Words to the World, which is appropriate because I got this question from Hot Ones. This is the Words to the World question is inspired by Hot Ones because Sean goes, hey, you can promote any idea that you wish. Look at that camera, that camera, that camera. We're a one camera show, so you don't have to do that. But it's Words to the World. You can promote any idea that you wish. Aaron, what are your words to the world?
So my words to the world are, it's a Voltaire, a quote usually attributed to Voltaire, which is perfect is the enemy of good. And I think you can also reframe that to done is better than perfect. You want to kind of even take it the next level, right?
Yeah.
That we are analysts. There's no perfect standard. Saliva's catching up with me. there's no perfect standard. Like any perfection is self-imposed. And you can miss out on doing a lot of good by trying to attain some perfection that you're never going to get. And I learned it at NCMEC with several cases where, you know, you just keep on, you want to keep digging. You want to find that last element because then it'll be perfect and it won't. And if you just finish it because the product is already amazing, give it to the people who need it and they will take it and run with it and they will do good with the work that you've done. So that's my advice. Perfect is the enemy of good.
Well, I leave every guest with, well, you've given me just enough to talk bad about you later. But I do appreciate you being on the show, Aaron. Thank you so much, and you be safe.
Thanks for entertaining this. And I didn't eat any of my donuts, so I'm going to have a donut.
You did fantastic. Like, hey, if they're scoring at home, you definitely beat me because I am got tears in my eyes. My glasses are fogging up. And
get back to me like 2 hours. We'll see how I feel.
All right. Very good.
Cool. Thank you, Jason.
Thank you for joining us today on Analyst Talk with Jason Alder. We hope you not only enjoyed the show, but also learned something new. For more information on our guests and information relating to today's topic, please visit our website at leapodcast.com. Special thanks to The Rough and Tumble for our theme song. For more of their music, you can visit their website at theroughandtumble.com. Also thanks to Kyle McMullen for our show logo. For more of his design, please visit his website at moderntype.com. The show is hosted, recorded, and edited by Jason Alder and written by me, Mindy. You can contact us both via the LEA Podcast website. Please join us again next time as we interview another expert in this great field.